I'm Rod Serling.
This is Ingrid Michaelson.
We're the Spinners.
I'm Nora Jones, but I'm wishing you a wonderful Christmas time.
This is Tim Halperin, and you all know this already, but you're listening to The Sounds of Christmas
podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler. Welcome to The Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I went down a rabbit hole recently and uncovered a 1964 made-for-TV Christmas movie. And I say uncovered because it was something that I wasn't previously aware of. I didn't discover it or have anything to do with it, except that I found it. I was looking up on a recent episode, I was talking about Christmas albums that had big anniversaries, and one of them was Henry Mancini's. And on his Merry Mancini Christmas album that came out in 1966, it included a song called Carol for Another Christmas that was attached to a made-for-TV movie of the same name. And I thought, I never heard of that. Let me take a look. And I'm blown away by what I found, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but since Carol for Another Christmas obviously has something to do with A Christmas Carol, I wanted to reach out to somebody who is, I want to say an expert, but I don't know how you... Colin from Scrooge, A Christmas Carol podcast is with us. Hi, Colin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I know we all love, well, anybody who listens to this podcast probably loves A Christmas Carol, and you have a podcast devoted to it. I don't know if you would refer to yourself as a fan, a super fan, or an expert, really.
There's no official licensure that I'm aware of, but I'm definitely a super fan at the very least. And if others want to use the word expert, I'll allow it.
Okay. When I found out about this, I immediately reached out to you, and I said something to the effect of, you probably already know about this, but are you aware of this 1964 TV movie? And you enthusiastically said yes. So I wanted to ask you to come on so that we could talk about it, because it is really just incredible. Not just Henry Mancini, but it was written by Rod Serling.
Yeah.
And it was the first of a series of TV movies that was developed to promote the United Nations and educate viewers about its mission. There were three more movies that came out over the next couple of years, and then there was one more that didn't get finished. None of them had anything to do with Christmas, but I just wanted to mention them. But this is just, it's amazing, and it aired a couple days after Christmas in 1964, and then disappeared until Turner Classic Movies started showing it in 2012. It's almost 50 years. And I think they've been showing it annually. I don't know if Ted's recent passing will change that, but I had no idea. I just happened to look it up and find that it was on HBO Max, which partners with Turner Classic Movies and a few other things. It's also been uploaded to YouTube many times, so I'm not going to put a link into that. I have no idea who has the rights to it, and I just don't want to play that game. But I feel like I'm almost overselling it, and it's just amazing. So the main character, the first one we meet, is Sterling Hayden. He's Grudge, they call him, instead of Scrooge.
Yep. Daniel Grudge.
Yeah. And previously, earlier that year, actually, Sterling Hayden had been in Dr. Strangelove as Brigadier General Jack D. Ripper. I don't know if there are any Dr. Strangelove fans on here. I mentioned that because somebody else from Dr. Strangelove was also in this.
Yes.
but he's the first one we meet, and then we quickly meet Nephew Fred, which they keep that from Dickens' story, Ben Gazzara.
Yeah.
I just thought, wow, just on the strength of that, we should all have heard of this.
Absolutely.
I mean, at the time, I looked it up at the time, Ben had been the main character in a TV show called Arrest and Trial that lasted a couple seasons just before this movie, actually. And most of the things that we know him from came afterwards, but still,
yeah,
still, wow. And right off the bat, you know that this is different because they're talking about war, and Ben is a big supporter of the UN and wants to talk about that, and Grudge has no use for it. How many times have you seen this?
So I think I saw it for the first time. I was trying to remember before the show. I think maybe a couple years ago, I remember the film critic William Bibbiani tweeted that it was on HBO. I'm like, oh, same thing. I've never heard of this. I need to see this. So I've seen it probably four or five times. Now I probably end up watching it most years. So I think I've caught on to most of it, but I still caught a few things this time that I'm like, oh, I didn't catch that before.
I've only seen it the one time, and I tried to go in cold without knowing much. And it started, and there's the Henry Mancini music, and there's Grudge, who I admit I didn't know, and Nephew Fred, who I didn't recognize, because this was 1964.
Sure.
And something that I just found out because of Wikipedia, there's a couple flashes after he kicks Fred out. There's a couple flashes, and he says, Marley. And there's no follow-up or anything, and Marley doesn't talk to him. Do you know who that was?
I have read that, although I went to IMDb and it didn't say this, but I've read that it was Peter Fonda, which I think is accurate of who's in the portrait.
Yeah. I saw an ad for it, like that they would put in TV Guide,
mm-hmm.
and Peter Fonda was listed, and I thought, I feel like I would have recognized him, and I then I saw that he was Marley, supposedly one of Grudge's oldest son who had died, but we never find out anything. We don't find out that much, really.
Yeah.
But then he walks out and is suddenly on a ship, and holy cow, it's Steve Lawrence, who's
yes.
the Ghost of Christmas Past. Wow. And one thing that I noticed about this movie versus other adaptations of A Christmas Carol, in most of them, I'm sure that I have not seen nearly as many as you have, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the ghosts are usually wanting to help Scrooge. And it seems like in this one, they are all really annoyed with this guy.
Yes, it's at the generous take, I think, would be tough love, and the more realistic take, they seem very annoyed with.
Yeah, but I thought, I had to look up, okay, what was Steve Lawrence doing in 1964? And people would have known him for his music, and he and his wife Edie had a TV show that had aired for a couple seasons before this, so they would have recognized him from that, in addition to lots of other TV appearances that he'd done. But he was more of a singer than an actor, so it was really just a shock that, oh my gosh, that's Steve Lawrence.
Yeah, and he's great. He's really good.
Yeah, I thought he was terrific. And constantly putting Grudge in his place.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great and very unexpected, not just that it was Steve Lawrence, but that the Ghost of Christmas Past is usually one of the more empathetic ghosts that feels for Scrooge and understands his past and wants him to learn from it. And Steve was just really annoyed with him, just irked with him. And that didn't change as we went to the next ghosts.
Not at all. No, everyone in this seems very annoyed with him. And that's definitely more of an American ideal of, we got it, we just fight right back. We don't, it's not passive in any way.
No, not at all. And he goes to his past in World War II, and I sort of thought I recognized the woman that was the driver for him. He and this woman are driving up in a Jeep, and that was Eva Marie Saint.
Yes, yeah.
And I was just, just blown away by the star power in this TV movie that I had never heard of. And I feel like this must have been really progressive for the day. They're in Japan and they're at a, I don't know if it's a children's hospital or just a hospital that happens to have a lot of children. And saying it's a hospital is really generous.
Yes. Yeah. It is a makeshift as makeshift can be. Yeah. Post Hiroshima.
And they're not holding anything back. That these kids, many have no faces. They're all wrapped in bandages. There's one child that comes staggering out with an eye patch, and he's terrified because there was thunder. And I just thought, wow, not that they showed this in 1964. That's
old
big
for network television. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was amazing. And then he goes to meet Pat Hingle, who is the ghost of Christmas Present.
Youngest I'd ever seen Pat Hingle.
Yeah. He's been in so many things. You'd know him if you saw him. He was Commissioner Gordon in the 1990s Batman movies. He's been in a ton of things. But he had no use for him. There was no kindness. Usually from the ghost of Christmas Present, you get some kindness.
Even the jolliness of the character was almost sarcastic, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. And there are people milling about homeless in many different languages, lots of groups of them performing some Christmas songs in whatever their native language is. And Grudge is starting to get a little uncomfortable, but I didn't notice any sort of shift at all in him.
It's very subtle, his shift over the whole course of this. It happens, but it's probably the most subtle that I've seen in any version. Well, not counting one where I think the writers forgot that he was supposed to change, but this one it's on purpose. But it's the most subtle change in a Scrooge I've seen that I think still works. It's incredibly slow, and there's no big emotion at all.
Yeah, I can think of so many that seem to wait until the ghost of Christmas yet to come shows them the tombstone and then, oh, I'll be good.
Right.
A lot of them seem to do that. But this is, like you said, it's a very slow change, which works well and is believable.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Especially for a guy like this who's very, I mean, he's obviously every Scrooge is cold, but this one is very gruff in a way that feels uniquely American.
Yeah. And then we meet the ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, Robert Shaw.
Yes.
Who for me is always Doyle Lonigan from The Sting. There were several times where he looks really angry. And this is a rare time when the ghost of Christmas Yet to Come actually speaks. But there were several times where he looked at Grudge and he said something, and I was waiting for Yafala.
Yeah.
And I know my friend Judy Pankhouse is screaming at her podcast player right now, how could you not mention Jaws? Yeah, he was, of course, most know him from Jaws.
Sure. But I think of The Sting or Pelham 1-2-3, he's fantastic in.
Yeah. And he was very good in this. And again, had no real use for Grudge, was annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to some kind of a meeting house that...
Yeah, the town hall. Yeah.
Yeah, that had possibly been in... I think it had been in Grudge's hometown, but it was a shell of a building, had been destroyed, and these people come in. And I feel like this is right out of Idiocracy.
Yes.
They come in and they're carrying like you would carry a pharaoh, except his throne is a horse saddle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Peter Sellers.
Yeah.
And Peter Sellers is the head of this group. He's the imperial me, and they call themselves all me. And that's sort of their theme, that everything is about me. I found it a little chilling and a little too real, because there are
just
some
a tad,
days, some days I feel like we're not far from that.
No, No.
And there's a mom in the background who's sitting there crocheting. And that was Britt Eklund, who's an actress, right, who I think was married to Peter Sellers at that time.
Yeah, I think that's why she ended up in this, is Peter Sellers was in it. And yeah, because they both worked, everyone in this worked for scale. So no one was paying their full fee for this.
Right.
They believed in the message. Yeah. So but I think she was there, and I think she was married to him at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And she didn't have any lines. I don't think she had any lines.
No, she's silent. No.
Yeah. But I don't want to spoil it, and it seems silly to say that I don't want to spoil an adaptation of A Christmas Carol, because most know. But the way they talk, and that somebody tries to stand up, and I just found that horrific.
Yes, the lynch mob in real time. Yeah.
Yeah, and absolutely unexpected. And they leave with a plan to attack their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And they leave, and Grudge is left there with Robert Shaw, who's walking away, and he grabs his robes, and the next thing he's back in his home, spoiler, I suppose.
Yeah.
And he's a changed man. But wow, for 1964, that...
It hits hard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's executed, I think it's executed beautifully.
Absolutely. It's a great movie.
I was so surprised that they had all this star power, and the ad for it that had Peter Fonda's name on it, it also listed Richard Harris and Christopher Plummer, but neither of them were in it unless their roles were so small, you know, if they're townspeople or something.
Yeah, I believe that was either a mistake. I read a bit about this. It was either a mistake or it was changed. I have the feeling, and I'm not sure about this, but I have the feeling with this that it was written, produced, filmed fairly quickly, because some of the writing at points, as much as I do like this, like some of the writing feels a bit like a first draft. So it feels like it was probably rushed out fairly quickly, and maybe some of the actors they thought they had couldn't make it.
Yeah, I was trying to decide if it was a sort of a rush thing, or if that's just me in 2026 looking back at a script that was written before I was born by Rod Serling. So I wasn't sure. I do know that this like director's cut kind of stuff, that the character of Grudge was supposed to be Ben Grudge.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so they thought it was the same initials as Barry Goldwater. Right.
Right.
So they
and that
do
actually,
it, just...
yeah, that's, who would have noticed?
No one would have thought of that. And also, I can't imagine, maybe there were. I can't imagine there were too many Barry Goldwater fans who are also big fans of The Twilight Zone.
Right.
But yeah, it's just one of those things of, that's an executive, studio executive note if I ever heard one.
Yeah, that was somebody trying to justify their executive producer name.
Yeah. Absolutely, because you're right. No one in their right mind would have ever said, oh, he has the same initials as Barry Goldwater. Clearly, that's what they're going for.
Yeah, this was actually supposed to air in early November, but because of that, they pushed it back to the end of December. So it actually aired after Christmas.
It aired after Christmas, and then, like you said, never again for almost 50 years, which is... Why? I mean, it is very much of its time, but so is A Christmas Carol. I mean, you know.
Yeah. And it's just, I can't imagine. I know that TV networks are constantly doing things that you look back on and you go, idiots. How could they have thought that was a good idea? I remember when they canceled ER when it was still a top 10 show. Mm-hmm. And I that was another network. But that ABC didn't air it again with all of those stars.
Right. And yeah, you'd think it would have some importance. Maybe, I mean, there was, as I'm sure you saw, some controversy of certain conservative societies complaining about it, which I'm sure they weren't going to watch it anyway. But like maybe that was just too much. They didn't want to re-air it, or maybe it just felt very much of 1964. I mean, I know the Cold War lasted decades after this, but you look at 64, Strangelove, Failsafe, the Sidney Lumet movie, and this all came out in 1964. They're all nuclear annihilation movies. It was clearly on the pulse of the nation.
And I suppose that's why they buried it, but as almost 50 years, and it was just it was just so, you know, I hate to keep saying that, it was just so shocking watching this and seeing all of these huge stars that were in it, who had, like you said, done it for scale. In fact, Henry Mancini didn't charge anything for the music.
Wow.
He just he just believed in and he just believed in and supported the UN. And I know that some of the reviews back then said it was a little preachy, but, you know, come on, A Christmas Carol is a little preachy.
That's kind of my feeling towards it when I kind of talked about it and reviewed it on my podcast was, is it preachy? Yeah, absolutely. But yes, it's A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Like I said, some of the dialogue a little on the nose at points, but I think it more than justifies it, particularly with that yet to come scene, which rivals the best stuff from The Twilight Zone, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. It was very uncomfortable, which is the feeling that Scrooge is supposed to get.
Yeah.
In the world that has moved on without him, beyond him, but because of him. And it's very uncomfortable and takes a turn I didn't see. And it was, I just kept thinking, God, this is like, is this where they got the idea for Idiocracy from that scene? Because Peter Sellers was terrific. And that was something else with all of these big names. Nobody phoned it in.
Oh no. No, they were all completely committed to the acting. They were all great. Yeah.
Yeah, the three actors that were the ghosts were I thought were phenomenal and completely believable and had such contempt for Grudge.
Yeah.
And it was, I just thought it was terrific. I'm surprised that Steve Lawrence didn't go on and do more. Maybe he didn't want to. Maybe
That was exactly my thought when I saw it. Of that, that's Steve Lawrence, that guy who's kind of known as like the corny singer guy. And he was just doing this phenomenal character actor piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious what you thought, not knowing anything about this. Because I've read different interpretations. Not a lot has been written about this special. But when you saw Peter Sellers, how would you have described his costume?
Maniacal.
Okay. Yeah. Because like he has a, I've read one person called it a pilgrim outfit, which I don't really see.
I had read that he was in a Santa suit with a cowboy.
That's the other
hat.
One I've seen, which I see even less.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't see that at all.
He's clearly, it's in black and white, so we can't see the color. But for those who haven't seen it, he has a large like hat on and he has some kind of like, it's like maybe it'd be like a green elfish looking costume, like shirt, but it does not look like a Santa suit. I always took him to be like a court jester.
You know, I've only seen it once, and that last scene in the future is just so shocking.
Yeah.
That I really didn't get to look around as much as I wanted to. But just and it's shocking. It has the Idiocracy vibe, but it's also shocking because there are outlandish things that Peter Sellers says that you could find on Twitter or even on the news today by people who are totally serious.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I wonder sometimes with things like this, like how much of a stretch was he imagining this was? Obviously, it's played for very dark comedy, but I don't think I would imagine even then, because he was speaking out against isolationists, right, both personally and politically. So an isolationist to the extreme is, I'm going to kill every other person until there's only one me, you know?
Yeah.
So it's an extreme, but it might not be as much of an extreme as we thought.
Yeah, that absolutely blew me away. And it was completely believable that when Grudge gets back to the present, that he's not the same Grudge that was at the beginning of the movie. And it's not ridiculous. He's not selling his giant Beverly Hillbillies size mansion.
I think it's huge.
Yeah. And, you know, and he's not funding some independent candidate who's going to, you know, he doesn't talk about doing any of that. He makes amends with nephew Fred and listens to the Christmas carols on the radio that his staff is playing. I did think when they handed him something to drink or eat in that last scene that he was going to invite them to join him, which didn't happen.
No, that's true. He's not maybe there yet. He does eat in the room with them, but you're right. He doesn't actually invite them to sit down, which suggests he still has a ways to go.
Yeah.
Because obviously the race angle, this is mostly not about racism. This was 1964, Civil Rights Act, and the butler and his cook are both African-American, and one of them goes to a very civil rights era-esque tragedy in the yet-to-come sequence. So that is obviously part of this.
Right.
When you think of the character being shot in the yet-to-come scene. So that is there, but it's one of the subcategories of this special, which is attacking a lot of issues.
Yeah, it really was. I didn't realize until just researching to talk to you about this that it was the first of several UN support themed movies. Mm-hmm. Never heard of any of the others. None of the others had this kind of star power attached to them, and none of them had anything to do with Christmas.
I have not seen
Christmas.
Any of them. Yeah. No.
Yeah, I don't know if they're out there. I haven't checked. I don't know. But Christmas is really my bag, so.
Yeah.
that Turner Classic Movies shows this every year, or at least was for a time. I don't know if they're still doing that. I stream anyway, so I can watch it on HBO Max and whenever I want. But it's not going to have it's not going to get the kind of popularity that 24 Hours of a Christmas Story gets.
No, yeah, 24 Hours of this would probably not be a hit.
No, it is just beyond me that something that is over 60 years old and had all of this star power and Henry Mancini's music, and it just sort of, for the most part, really faded away. Even now.
Oh yeah, it is not a household name by any means. Even if you look at Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol, which came out 2 years before this, not a standard on the scale of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but everyone still knows Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol. No, very few people know of this one.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I think about some of the adaptations of A Christmas Carol. The Stingiest Man in Town leaps to mind. It's not that's not really a household name kind of thing either. I can't remember the last time I saw it that it was going to be on anywhere. Mm-hmm. But there's a gulf of difference between that and this Rod Serling movie.
Yeah. And I think if I'm not mistaken on this, I think this is the first TV or film adaptation, at least in sound, that is set in the present day and not set in Victorian England.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
I'm thinking through the other ones, 40s, 30s, 50s. Yeah, at least film and TV, every other version of A Christmas Carol up until this point that still exists and is in sound, had been set in the time of the book. And this one is set in the present day, and we'd get more of those in the future. There's something called an American Christmas Carol from the 70s, which is wonderful. And then many, many, Scrooged, obviously, and more after that. But I think this is the first film or TV adaptation that we know of that is actually in the present day, which is something historic in its own right.
Yeah, I think if you are a fan of A Christmas Carol and you haven't heard of this one like I hadn't up until, maybe a week ago, go check if you've got HBO Max, look it up. If you don't, you can find many versions of it that have been uploaded to YouTube. I think it would be worth your while just to see it once, because it's just, and not just the preachiness, but just the performances are really outstanding.
Yeah, just everyone across the board. You've heard the list, the cast list, and it's never distracting in the way that some A-list cast movies are, right? Where it's everybody in this is a heavy hitter and some people are just phoning it in. Like you said, no one is phoning it in here. It's just an incredible line of actors. Even the actor who plays the doctor in Japan was something of a groundbreaking Japanese-American leading man. There's a lot of people in this who, small and big roles alike, who are just unbelievable talent.
And the topics that it covers, being in Hiroshima after World War II and talking about homeless people, and you mentioned the civil rights aspect of it, so much of that, It's just a surprise to me, at least, for something from 1964. Less of a surprise because Rod Serling's attached, But
absolutely,
still,
yeah.
But still, that this made it through and ABC aired it. Amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is shocking because you think, in general, I think at least up until the time, TV was thought of as a more safe, we'll say, medium than film, which could be a little bit edgier, but still had its limitations. By 64, it was the Hays Code was gone, but TV still had very strict limitations. So I agree. When I first saw this and when I continue to see it, I'm like, this really aired? Wow. Okay. Good for you, Rod Serling.
Yeah. Yeah. It is truly incredible. And it probably sounds like I am overhyping it. And I'm not. And I'm also not making a nickel from it. So it's not that either. But I highly recommend you seek it out. Have we missed anything that...
You mentioned the faceless children in Japan, which I thought this time really hit me. And I was even thinking of that as like a metaphor for like the faceless dead in war, right? Where it's just, we don't have to look at them. We don't think about it. It's just a number. And in that case, he does have to look at them, even though they don't have faces, which is just, that's a horrifying image.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah. The theme is just gorgeous. A wonderful little Christmas theme at the beginning of this that we found on that Henry Mancini album. And it's great. It's a lovely little theme.
Yeah, I didn't know that existed. And I have that Henry Mancini album, but because I didn't know the name of that song, moved on, you know, as many do. But the music is terrific, and there's just so much good about this. I was gonna say, if you worked for ABC in 1964, but if you did, you're pushing 90 by now probably. But if you did, and you're listening to this, and you know why it only aired that one time, I'd love to hear that, because I think it's so powerful, even though it is dated and preachy and whatever else you want to say, it's a really powerful movie.
Yeah.
And if you're a TV network and you have this list of stars, who cares if it's preachy?
Yeah, absolutely. Who cares what the dialogue is? And it's mostly good dialogue, don't get me wrong. But yeah. Who cares what the dialogue is when it's these people at their, you know, up to 11 delivering it?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely amazing. What do you have coming up on Scrooge, A Christmas Carol podcast?
Sure. So during the off season, I've been covering all kinds of stuff. I started with a few months covering the silent versions, which that was my first few months of this year. And this month I am talking about Lionel Barrymore, probably one of the most iconic Scrooges, but he never played him on film or TV. So he did radio versions, he did albums, and I'm covering a few of those this month. He was a film and TV actor, most famously in It's a Wonderful Life. But yeah, I'm covering the radio versions of Lionel Barrymore, who influenced a whole lot of Scrooges, even if he was never Scrooge in a visual medium.
Those old radio shows are, it's a shame that they are mostly forgotten. Because yeah. there was some great stuff in there. I got a present one Christmas of a set of CDs that has tons of these old shows, all the Christmas episodes. Mm-hmm. And I had that A Christmas Carol, and I had the radio version of It's a Wonderful Life, and the radio version of Miracle on 34th Street. And it's something that would never happen today. But
no, there would never be any other yet. Yeah. TV or radio theater versions of existing movies. I can't imagine the rights.
The only one, and I know there was some Star Wars stuff that they did that, but when Patrick Stewart was doing A Christmas Carol on Broadway and they released it as a book on tape,
mm-hmm.
back then, that was terrific, and that was worth getting. And mm-hmm. I wish
that
somebody,
was his one-man show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish somebody had recorded that on video.
Yes.
I'd love to see that. Before I let you go, what's the easiest way for people to find you? Or the best way?
You can find me on YouTube, Blue Sky, pretty much anywhere. I don't really use the Twitter much anymore because, you know, everything. Facebook, anywhere pretty much. Scrooge, A Christmas Carol podcast at Scrooge Pod. It's easy to find. My logo is just four Scrooges against a blue background. Easy to see, easy to find. You can look at the YouTube as well, but it's really just audio of the podcast for the most part. So anywhere you get your podcasts or on YouTube, Scrooge Pod.
Okay. I'll put some links down in the show notes for that too. Thanks so much. Thank you, Colin, so much for coming on and talking about this. I knew you were the person to go to when I came across this movie.
Absolutely happy to do it because, yeah, I love this one and I'm glad you discovered it. I hope more people discover it because, like I initially said, it's very, very underseen and it shouldn't be. I'm glad it's out there and people can discover it now. So thank you.
And thank you so much for listening, helping us share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page that lists most, if not all, of the sites that stream the Sounds of Christmas podcast. And I'll put a link to that down in the show notes, too. So you can click on that, scroll around and find your favorite, then click on over and subscribe. Then you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.